Good afternoon, and welcome to Coastal Conversations, here on WERU. We explore issues facing Maine's coastal communities through dialogue with people who live, work, and play on our coast. From fisheries to tourism, from energy to environment, from economy to ecology, we go beyond the social media soundbites, probing deeply into complex issues and solutions. Coastal Conversations is supported by Maine Sea Grant, in partnership with Skudik Institute and the First Coast. Welcome to this month's episode of Coastal Conversations. Good afternoon, and welcome to Coastal Conversations. This is Annie Fagan of Maine Sea Grant. I'll be your host for today's episode. This is the second installment of a two-part summer series exploring Maine aquaculture, an industry, community, and part of the busy working waterfront way of life in many of Maine's coastal towns. Aquaculture refers to the cultivation of aquatic organisms like animals and plants. You may also hear people refer to aquaculture generally as sea farming, even though it can also happen on land, indoors, or in freshwater. Today, we're exploring the topic of women in aquaculture, diving into the lives, careers, and experiences of three women in Maine's aquaculture sector. I'm joined by Molly Bangs of Muscongus Bay Aquaculture, Tony Small of Ice House Oysters, and Phoebe Wagner of Deer Isle Oyster Company. Welcome to you all, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Annie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Annie.
Why don't you all tell us a little bit about yourselves, where you're based, and what you do?
Hi, I'm Phoebe. I'm based in Deer Isle. I work for the Deer Isle Oyster Company. I'm the farmhand, so that means I work with my coworkers on the husbandry of oysters, so that involves like flipping the bags, tumbling, cleaning things, that kind of stuff.
Hi, I'm Molly. I manage the hatchery for Muscongus Bay Aquaculture, which is located in Bremen, Maine. Muscongus Bay is one of the largest producers of seed, which are juvenile shellfish for commercial growers in the Northeast. And yeah, I've been with the company since 2016 and still enjoying it.
Hi, I'm Tony. I am a co-founder of Ice House Oysters with my husband here in Port Clyde, Maine. We have a very small oyster farm that has recently started growing, and we're doing it. We're actually one of the few farms that gets to repurpose one of the lobster pounds that is sitting fallow on the coast of Maine. So the lobster pounds are no longer a holding for the lobsters during certain parts of the market or season, but they're sitting there and they're usually pretty good spaces for oyster growing, or at least that's what we're starting to discover. So we're very grateful to be able to work with the St. George River sites and the pound site in Port Clyde Harbor.
Neat. Feels like a good place to start might be, how did you get into this? Like, what brought you to aquaculture and kind of what has that path looked like?
Yeah, I grew up in a pretty salty environment. I'm from Martha's Vineyard. And yeah, I kind of grew up following my dad around salt ponds, digging quahogs and going scalloping with him in the wintertime. And then in the late 90s, aquaculture kind of came to the vineyard as a way for displaced fishermen to start, you know, little mom and pop businesses in the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group, which is a nonprofit small hatchery there. Did a lot of work to support them. And a lot of those businesses are still going and still booming and, you know, still run by the same people, which is awesome. And now their kids are taking them over. And I ended up going to school for aquaculture. I studied in British Columbia and also at Salem State University. And I landed here in 2016. And I like what I do. It's a lot of work, but it's also, you know, very fruitful to say like, hey, I'm making all this seed and, you know, someone's going to buy it and they're going to do something different with it. And that's going to contribute to their livelihood in a sustainable way and continue people working on the water.
So I went to College of the Atlantic and I went in thinking I would do sustainable agriculture. So my brother, he's a lobsterman and he did an internship at the Sea Car in Sullivan, Maine. But he was like working with like they were feeding halibut and stuff, like growing all the stuff that they don't even do anymore there. And then at COA, I was like talking to friends about aquaculture and I realized like I kind of actually knew much more about it than like the average person, average undergraduate at least. And I started taking more like food system classes and then like put like a aquaculture twist on things on my projects and just doing more of that. And then I eventually ended up doing an internship at Mooksea Farm
the summer, and then really enjoyed myself, and then just kept taking more classes, like the theory-based classes at COA until I graduated this spring, and then got this job.
And Tony, how about you?
So I actually am a Maine born from Cape Elizabeth, and it was not on my radar until I think it was about 2015. I caught up with some old sailing friends, and some of you may know Darcy Couture is an oyster grower in the Harpswell area. She was one of those said friends, and she was like, "Hey, you and John should really think about growing oysters." And my husband John is a bluefin tuna fisherman, former lobsterman. And I came home and said, "Darcy says we should be growing oysters." And he was like, "Huh?" Thought about it overnight, and the next day he was like, "Look, give it a whirl." And we started, I guess it was probably 2017. We started just with a really small batch and kind of grew it up from there. Anyway, yeah, it wasn't exactly on my radar. It's something that I've fallen into, but absolutely adore learning about and being part of this community and watching a food system in its beginning stages.
Tony, you just mentioned Darcy as kind of a mentor, someone that sort of helped inspire you to get started. And I'm curious for all three of you, how many other women are you working with? What does that network look like? Has it changed over time? Kind of what's the landscape in that space?
I've been really lucky, I think, in my experience to work with and get to know a lot of women in the aquaculture industry, really from the get-go. My first like nerdy aquaculture job was for the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group, just like being a hatchery tech there. And the hatchery manager at the time was a female, Amandine Surye, and she was just really inspiring. She was kind of a tough cookie and no nonsense, but she was really soft inside, and she was just a really smart, good leader, and I learned a lot from her. And then, further on down the road, when I started working here, this company was founded by a woman. Toni Simmons founded Musconetta Bay in 1999, and she was really like a pioneer of the industry. And she was also no nonsense. And I worked really closely with her for a long time. I learned a ton from her. Also, the general manager of our company currently, Nellie Beluski, she's a woman, and I certainly would not be here without her. She's an incredible boss. She's one of the smartest people, period, that I think I've ever met. And she's a fantastic leader. So I'm really lucky to have her. I have women coworkers. A lot of my employees are women. Yeah, aquaculture is a great place to be a woman for me. Anyway, I've had a really fantastic experience here with both other women and in the industry. So I'm very thankful for that.
I'll jump in. Well, so as I said, Darcy is someone who really kind of got me into the thick of things and is someone I will, at least in the off season, call for a morning coffee chat and check in and how are you handling this and what's going on with that. And it's been really lovely meeting a number of women in the industry, people who are kind of pushing the rock up the hill, as it were, but it doesn't feel arduous. Like there's something very kind and friendly about the aquaculture industry on the whole. This week, I was one of the nominees for the Phyllis Wyeth Visionary Award, which was really fun to see, to go Sarah Rademacher, the founder of American Unagi, and Annie Langston Knoll from Maine Aquaculture Innovation Center. And it was just a really interesting moment to realize, like, I think the whole industry is in a lot of ways buoyed by the work of some women, many women, like not just some. Like I just feel like every time I turn around, it's really fun to meet new faces in the industry. And I've certainly got a lot of respect for Tony and Nellie, both at Musconetta Bay Aquaculture. And yeah, and I just recently met Abby Burrows from Deer Isle, and that was a really fun connection to make. So it's just, I think it's a real joy.
My whole crew is women. Abby Barrows is the owner operator of Deer Isle Oyster Company where I work. My manager is Anna Capitano. Both women. Really great to work with. We have a lot of fun on the water. Yeah, so it's a full female crew.
It sounds like you all have a lot of women like in your close circles or that you're interacting with at work or in your communities. And I'm curious if that changes the dynamic of the work you do or the way you do it. Is that something that you enjoy? Is it something you don't really think about at all? What's that like at work?
For me, it's good. It's positive. The hatchery is a really dynamic place, and it's not just like oh, it's just me and like I do all this stuff. No, there's a lot of us, and everybody's role is so crucial. And the way that we work together is what makes it all happen. You know, the key to that is communication, and all of the women on our team communicate seamlessly, and we work together so cooperatively. There's not a lot of ego involved. It's just like people really working together respectfully and communicating well and getting a job done. And I love that working dynamic. It's fantastic. You know, not saying we don't have some great men around too, but it certainly is a common theme with women employees that I've noticed. And I like that. Feels like a good place. I don't ever have to think, you know, that like, like I'm a woman in a man's industry and, you know, I gotta plow through this and all the adversity. Or it's not like that at all. It's not something that I ever really think about on my own. It's not my struggle, you know. And I know that for a lot of women, it probably is. But my overarching hope for all women in the industry and in any industry is that they could also have a, you know, great experience where we don't have to fight that battle.
And Tony, you're running a business with your husband, John. Have you found that there are different experiences in that regard?
I think so for sure. I mean, I've been lucky in that I think all of my waterfront, quote unquote, waterfront experiences with men have been really great. Like I sailed on the tall ship Rose for about a year with a crew of really fantastic human beings, and we women were in the minority. Maybe that kind of ingrained an experience for me of like, I just kind of tagged along with John to the working waterfront, and I'm like, oh, yep, I'm the wife. And but I also have my own story with Glenn Libby. We did a book called Caught about the ground fishermen turning their industry from sort of solo fishing to cooperative, working on marketing. So I have different experiences where I think I don't get to work day to day with a lot of women in this industry. Like I am working by myself mostly when I'm coaching, and then when I'm working on the farm, I'm either working by myself or working with John. And we actually have a guy helping us for the first time this year. And sometimes our daughter Leanna comes along and gives us a hand. So it's still sort of male focused in terms of our farm and environment. We're right next to a lobster wharf. I'm also developing really interesting friendships with women in the industry that are, you know, evolving into maybe not the farm per se, but how do we support women on the farm? How do we support the industry? My curiosity in bodies and how do you improve productivity and longevity when you're working really, really hard with your body? I feel like I get to move back and forth between the both male and female dominated environments pretty equally, and I enjoy that. I feel like it's I don't know, I feel like it's a really nice part of just watching the evolution of the waterfront.
Phoebe, what about you? You work with an entirely female crew. Does that just feel normal to you? Is it something that you think about? Is that something that's intentional on Abby's part? Or maybe none of the above? I don't know.
I honestly don't really think about it that much. I don't think it was like entirely intentional on Abby's part, but I know it's something that she's spoken about as being a positive. I feel like the only time I think about it is like if there's like a kayaker that comes up to us and goes like, "Great work, ladies," or something like that. Like I feel, yeah, it's only really when like someone else draws attention to it that I'm like, "Oh yeah, I guess we are all women." And yeah, I mean, I feel like in like fisheries in general, it is definitely like male dominated. Like I've worked with men plenty of times, and I've never had like a problem with it. I've really enjoyed my time with them and had great male mentors and stuff. But I do often feel like I'm like the lady, and it's like a bit of like a token, I guess. Or I feel like I have to like prove myself, or and sometimes even I don't know, like be like a martyr or something. And I just don't feel like that at all, working with women. And I think that can be the case a lot of the times in male dominated industries. And I think that can kind of take away from like if you're always like in a place where you feel like you have to like prove yourself or do the very best or else you're just the lady, that can be kind of taxing. And I guess I'd never feel like that working with all women.
I think in the past, when I've had jobs that were, you know, more like Phoebe was describing on the water, which is, you know, a much more male-dominated environment, yeah, like you get a funny look every now and then. And I don't know. I guess I just get used to it. I don't think it ever really slowed me down or stopped me, but.
Yeah, it's funny actually to have this conversation because I feel like I wonder how quickly this has changed. Like, I wonder if Toni Simmons would have a really different answer when she started. Like, I remember right before we sailed the Rose to Europe, I was standing on the deck and it was like an open house for people to come see us off. And there were some elderly women who sort of looked at me and went, "You're going to make this trip?" And it's just odd how we've conceived of where we do and don't belong. That said, on ships, there's all sorts of superstition about having women on board. But then there's also all sorts of fabulous stories about women helping their, you know, their captain husbands navigate around Cape Horn because they fall sick. And, you know, she's been paying attention. I think what's exciting to listen to in this conversation is like, oh, maybe it doesn't have as much teeth as it used to. I think for some people, like, personal experience probably would butt up against that. But I think that's what's exciting about watching women in aquaculture right now, is that there's a lot of us, and it doesn't seem to, like, it just seems like, okay, here we go. We're, you know, this new industry, and we're coming in and making things happen.
I totally agree with you. That was like one of the first things I thought about, where I'm like, you know, like, it's been kind of breezy. But then also just thinking about, like you had mentioned, you know, Toni, who would never have said this to me, but, like, you know, she built a hatchery from the ground up in 1999 in rural Maine. Like, that was a hard thing to do as a woman. You know, that took a lot of guts and a lot of work. And I know that it was harder because she was a woman. Not that she told me that, but you just, you know, you draw conclusions. So she paved the way for us, you know, and she hired a lot of women, and she expected a lot from us too. Sometimes I was just like, you know, this seems like a lot, but now in retrospect, I'm like, thank you. Like, you prepared me for, you know, a lot of things, and you fought a lot of battles that I don't have to fight now. And that also goes to men in the aquaculture industry, as I'm sure, like, you guys all know, there's so many amazing men that work in this industry in so many different roles. And the fact that they are so supportive and inclusive of women, you know, without really seemingly trying to be, has made it easier for us. So, like you were saying, Toni, like, it's a good time to be a woman in aquaculture. So, you know, thank you for everybody that made that possible. It's a good place for a woman to work.
Well said.
Thanks.
Welcome back to Coastal Conversations here on WERU Community Radio at 89.9 FM and streaming online at weru.org. Today, we're talking all about aquaculture, with a special focus on gender and women on the waterfront. I'm your host, Annie Fagan of Maine Sea Grant, and I'm joined today by Toni Small of Ice House Oysters, Phoebe Wagner of Deer Isle Oyster Company, and Molly Bangs of Muscungus Bay Aquaculture. Let's get back into it. Just listening to the three of you kind of bop back and forth, it strikes me, and this is common in aquaculture, we hear about this a lot, that each of you has some tie, whether it's personal or family or history, to commercial fishing. It seems probably pretty fair to say, you know, especially in Maine, that fishing is a much more male-dominated environment. And so, was that conscious that your life took you in this different direction, or it just happened that way?
Yeah, I think the fishing industry, wherever in the Northeast, you know, it's romanticized and it's iconic, and it's a lot about, you know, culture of a place. You know, what did people do in these towns before they turned into vacation towns? Like, that's something that's always interested me, coming from like the mecca of vacation towns on the East Coast. Anyway, so I think it was my interest in like the whole culture of the fishing industry that kind of sparked the journey. I didn't really know where I was going. I was just like one door after another, and I never wanted to work on a commercial fishing boat or be a commercial fisherman, you know. But what's cool about aquaculture is there's so many different hats you can wear, and there's a space for whatever your strengths are, which is so cool, even in like a microcosm like the hatchery, you know, and then opening it up like to, you know, farm work or policy, or there's just so many different things you can do in this industry, depending on what your skill set, your interests, and your strengths are.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I do remember there was a really profound moment when I was on the Rose and we went up to Halifax and we went to the fishing museum there. And there was a gentleman who'd obviously been a fisherman. He had these just huge paws. And he was sitting as a docent out in front of the museum. And it broke my heart because there was no fishing left. It was like there was the museum to the fishing. And I just found that really just heart wrenching. It was part of the reason I approached Glenn Libby whenever I started that 2009, the book, was I was like, I just want to be witness to whatever comes next and be present to it, record it, make sure people understand what we give up when we give up working waterfront. Because I don't know, I really find there's an incredible connection between people working the water and understanding something a little bit more deeply about the rhythm of life and the cycle of life. And I don't know how I got here, but I'm really grateful to be where I am doing the things I'm doing.
Same.
Yeah, well said. A lot of head nodding happening right now. Awesome. For people who are just less familiar with either working waterfronts or aquaculture, what do you wish people knew about what you do or what the work is like, or what's something that they might not see unless they came and followed you around for a day?
Aquaculture is hard work. People like to idealize and romanticize it, but it's a lot of repetitive stuff and it's a lot of counting and it's a lot of numbers. So I think, before you sign up for work on an oyster farm, be sure you don't mind the rain and you don't mind counting stuff for a long time.
A lot of it is like really repetitive work, and I mean it is farm work. I think there's just like a blurry line between aquaculture and fishing sometimes, and so people like will bring in the oysters to land, and there'll be people like on the shore, and they'll say, "Oh, how many did you get today?" And it's like it's the same every day. Like we're farming them. I guess it'd be cool for the public to know that it is a farm, and like we do buy the seed, we buy the baby oysters. And we're not like feeding them or doing anything like that, but we are raising them and that kind of stuff.
How many did you get today? I really like that a lot.
I mean, I spend a lot of time trying to educate people about how many layers to oyster farming and aquaculture in general there are in terms of like there's the regulatory layer, there's the farming layer, there's the people, like how are we going to manage this as a human being working in the water, working in this environment? Where do you need mechanical advantage? Like, there are a lot of ways I feel like John and I have struggled physically to make it accessible, to make it like something we could actually do and do for many, many years. Like it's not, it's still very, it's very young. And I feel like there's a lot for the industry to grow into in terms of like creating boats, creating technology that would actually allow farming to be something a bit more friendly to the human body. And then perceptions. Like everybody I know who's in the industry cares about the water. I think we're still so young in the industry and learning how to make this all work. And yeah, it's just the beginning. And I don't say that as like, oh, we're gonna be huge and take over the world. I say that as like, it's really hard. It's really, really hard. And it feels like there's some pieces to it that are reasonably hard, and there's some pieces that are unreasonably hard.
I think it's fair to say that everyone who lives or works or plays on the coast of Maine knows that the coast of Maine and who calls it home is changing. For folks who are looking for a place on the coast or maybe in aquaculture or on the working waterfront, what would you say to those folks as they think about just kind of what they might do or where they might belong?
I think one of the hardest things for us in terms of like hiring is like where do people live? People that are young, that are fresh out of college and looking to get into the industry, a lot of them are coming from away and they need to live somewhere nearby, and this is mid-coast Maine and options are really limited and prices for rentals are through the roof. So that's a huge hurdle for us. We've had to people that we offered jobs to that couldn't find a place to live, so we didn't get to hire that person. So yeah, something needs to change there. It's contrary to what the aquaculture industry is saying. We're saying, hey, come here. Like this is, probably the biggest employer of people under 30 in mid-coast Maine, definitely in Lincoln County. Come here and live where, it's messed up and it's a huge challenge.
Yeah, I can speak on that. I'm living currently in a like off-grid cabin. It's has no electricity or running water, and it's like really fun and beautiful, but it would definitely not be like a long-term solution, and it's not a year-round solution. As someone who's like new to the aquaculture industry and to this business, it's I'm having a really fun summer, but it's not like a sustainable one. So yeah, if I wanted to stay here in Deer Isle or anywhere, and continue this, I would need some longer term housing.
especially like year-round housing. I mean, I am a farmhand, so I'm not, I don't have a crazy salary, but like also, yeah, like coming into aquaculture can be like a minimum wage job, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's just not accessible for a lot of people who want to live on the coast and work on the coast.
You know, as an owner operator, I think it's worth noting if you wanted to come and start a farm on the coast of Maine for all the reasons just described, it's challenging. And then it is not a fast learning curve. The 7 years before you begin to see a return on investment is probably pretty accurate, depending on what it is you're learning. But there's cycles to the learning that feel really long and arduous. And it doesn't seem like there's a lot of ways to get around that. There are a lot of things we have no control over in the environment that we're working in particular. And I find farming on the whole to be something that is undervalued culturally. Like, I think individuals value it a lot, but I think culturally we need an update on how we perceive people who grow food.
I mean, you hit on so many good points there, but, you know, just the idea of all these challenges, you know, whatever it is this year, it's going to be something else next year. And I think when I first started, before I was in a position where, you know, it was my responsibility to deal with these challenges, I was like, oh God, like, that's scary. Like, how do you do it? And then, you know, after going through so many years of it, my problem solving skills just like appeared out of nowhere, like ones I didn't realize that I had. And now that's what I like about the job. It keeps you on your toes in a good way. Like, you don't know what's coming, but you're confident that there will be a solution and you'll figure it out. And I like that. It keeps me from getting bored. If you're like decision making averse, or if you're afraid of challenges or the unknown, you know, it might not be the industry for you, but it might be. Maybe you just don't know yet.
I guess as like a young person thinking this is something I could make a career out of, like, think that's a good idea.
I do. I think, first of all, you have a bunch of experience already being steeped in watching another farm. Like, on the whole, Phoebe, like, yeah, keep going.
Cool.
Yeah, if you like it and you just feel good and at home with what you're doing, like, there's going to be so many other opportunities coming your way. Like, it sounds like you've already had some cool ones and you're making connections, and, you know, you might end up doing something that, you know, you didn't even know existed. Yeah, if it feels good, keep doing it.
Hearing two experienced women in the industry cheer on a relative newcomer and encourage her to find her own way felt like the perfect end to an incredible conversation about aquaculture, gender, and working waterfronts. Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of Coastal Conversations. Join us on the fourth Friday of each month at 4 p.m. for information, stories, and conversations about the issues and people of the Maine coast. That great music you're hearing in the background is called A Following Sea and was composed and performed by Paul Anderson. On behalf of Maine Sea Grant and in partnership with Skudik Institute and the First Coast, we wish you a good weekend.